Happy Wednesday, March 13, aka the day Uranus was discovered. Or Uranus, as my dad likes to try and encourage me to pronounce it, but I'm not going to. In 1781, British astronomer William Herschel was surveying the stars in the night sky through a homemade telescope when he saw what he thought was a comet, but once he started tracking it, realised it was orbiting the sun, and therefore it's the planet we know and love today. Now, mihi, William Herschel, and happy 243rd birthday, Uranus. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. Kiwi film royalty Lee Tamahori joins us to explain why his new movie is so timely. Could you survive on an annual grocery bill of just $5,000? We meet the Waikato woman who's set herself that challenge. Plus, it's the series of events that sent the internet into a frenzy. We're catching up on all things Princess Kate Middleton. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Now, $5,000 for an entire year's worth of groceries sounds like the stuff of fairy tales, particularly during the cost of living crisis. But it's a challenge one Waikato woman has set herself. Stacey Scott, who lives near Raglan, is behind the Farmer's Wife Homestead YouTube channel and appears to have budgeting down to a fine art. And with Stats New Zealand releasing new data on food prices later today, and with economics consultancy Infometrics predicting a 2.9% year-on-year increase, we could all do with some tips. So Stacey Scott is here now to reveal her secret. Stacey, hello.
Hi.
First of all, a year's worth of groceries for $5,000. How on earth are you going to pull that off?
Careful planning, hopefully. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a figure that I've pulled out of the sky, really. I'm roughly budgeting about $120 a week for fruit and veggies and top up of staple ingredients and any meat that we need. It's taken a while to get to the point that I'm at, and I like to bulk buy food and stuff like that. Not a hoarder, but, you know, have just good staple ingredients, large bags of flour, large bags of sugar, things like that, and try and make as many products as I can to help supplement. So I don't have to buy them at the supermarket, basically.
How easy do you reckon it would be for me to follow your way of living?
My $5,000 challenge is personally just for myself or our family. I'm not saying that that's doable for a lot of other families. Everybody spends their money differently. What I'm trying to do with my YouTube channel is teach people how easy it is to bake things yourself and cook from scratch and things like that. Mm. So not necessarily for everybody, but it's just a personal challenge that I wanted to do for myself.
And I believe you've got three adults and a teenager in the household as well. Are they, is everyone on board? Do you all chip in when it comes to creating the meals, or are you head chef?
Head chef. Yeah, I love to be in the kitchen.
Have you always had this approach, Stacey, or has the cost of living of late pivoted your thinking?
I've always been like this. I raised a family of six children. It was a one-income family and, you know, it was difficult. I'm going back to the 90s and the early 2000s. So I learned how to cook things from scratch and live off the oil, smell of an oily rag, as it was. But so I've always been this way. I mean, I like to look after the money that I earn.
And we are mid-March. How are you tracking for your $5,000 spend limit?
Yeah, pretty good. I've spent roughly $980 this year so far. Most of that is on fruit and veg. I don't have a vegetable garden at the moment because I've got some current injuries. But, you know, I buy some meat with that, fruit and veg, and top up some of my bulk items.
And you mentioned that you haven't got a garden going at the moment. Do you live off the land in any other ways?
We get the odd, you know, mutton, which is the older sheep that don't have much more use. My husband likes to hunt, so occasionally we'll get some pig or some venison if we're lucky. And that's about it. And I raise chickens for eggs.
And I think you're a sucker for a challenge because there's the $5,000 annual grocery bill. That's one thing. But then one of your recent YouTube videos was trying to see how many meals you could make from $150 weekly spent. How did that go?
it went really, really well. And it's actually what has catapulted my YouTube channel in the last couple of weeks. It's just given, it's resonated with people from all over the world because times are so hard at the moment and they're getting a lot out of that video because it's giving them different ideas. And that's what I aim to do, is just give people different ideas and try and use what you've got at home and cook from scratch, because you can do it. It's not that hard. And I try to do step-by-step instructions to show people.
What are your top tips for someone to change their ways right here, right now? Like, what are two things that someone could go away from this interview with and implement today?
I started this journey by buying things on special. So if, for instance, you know, our toothpaste came up on special, instead of buying the one, I would buy three or four. And therefore, you're always buying things on special. And that's pretty much how it started, just little bits at a time. I didn't go out and spend $2,000 to stock up the pantry and the freezers and things like that. So start little, always go with a list and meal plan. I monthly meal plan, and that really, really helps us.
And what's for dinner tonight, Stacey?
Good question. I'll probably pull out a freezer meal tonight. Been a busy day.
Stacey Scott, a delight to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us. And you can find Stacey at The Farmer's Wife Homestead on YouTube.
Lovely. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
You better believe we're unpacking the Kate Middleton conspiracy theories later in the show, because this story has a life of its own. We're going to look at how we got here and some of the wackier theories. And hey, if you are enjoying what you're hearing, chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because it means you'll never miss more wacky Kate Middleton conspiracies. A legend of Kiwi film is back with a new movie.
What do you want?
I ask that you spare the lives of these people.
Choose.
I cannot make that choice.
Very well.
The Convert in Cinemas Tomorrow is a historical epic loosely based on Hamish Clayton's debut novel, Wolf. Set in pre-colonial Aotearoa, the film explores a war between two Māori tribes and the British settlers who get caught up in it. It stars Aussie acting royalty Guy Pearce, Kiwi Te Oreore Ngātai Melbourne, and after positive responses at film festivals around the world, it's our chance to catch it. Joining us is The Convert's award-winning director Lee Tamahori and one of its producers Robin Scholes, a duo with a history of brilliant movies, including Once Were Warriors, Tēnā Kōrua.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
While The Convert is a work of fiction, it's still based on history, right? Lee, were you just buried in research for months on end?
Well, I knew a lot of the history already, and studied quite a bit of it, but we did a whole lot more. And, you know, it's all based on Honohiko and Te Nauparaha, Te Whareawhare and others. You can see pieces of those characters in the characters that the actors portray. But I was kind of fascinated with the genocidal nature of the musket wars themselves. The fact that arguably it was Christianity that saved them, Māori, from destroying themselves. The other thing I was interested in was a small population, tiny population of white Europeans hanging on to a little scrap of land, while all around them they were outnumbered 100, 200 to 1 by warlike warriors. And because there was no law in the land from 18, there wasn't any law till 1835, and the British Imperial armies came across from Australia. Anyway, I got wrapped up in the whole idea of selling guns to Māori so they could wipe each other out and not be caring about the consequences.
I can tell you the other thing that we should mention here is that we had an extraordinary historian sort of both Māori and Pākehā sort of culture and people at this time, Brad Harmy. He set up the whole fictional world. Like a very early stage, he developed, you know, the key characters, the two chiefs, and wrote a full whakapapa of them. So we were guided sort of by this, by, you know, whilst they were inspired by certainly Hamish Clayton's book and also a lot of other real historic figures, he invented these characters sort of for the film.
What do you want viewers coming away from the film with?
Oh, a sense of they've seen something of early New Zealand history with the two cultures miles apart from each other, yet looking at each other and seeing if they can live in harmony. People just should just think, have I been had an authentic experience about a period in time in New Zealand history that feels realistic and authentic? By and large, most of the people I've spoken to who have seen it think do come away with that.
Yes, the people I've spoken to as well, they say, "Oh, well, it's a love story that Munro has love and respect for this culture that he is thrown into, and they, in turn, respect and love him." A couple of people stood up and said, thank you very much for this film, because it's a very timely film for a nation at the moment looking at where we're going. It's very timely and it's very good to be reminded about that mutual love and respect.
Robin, you've literally just stolen my next question, which was around the timeliness of the film, given the considerable tensions around at the moment, prompted by things like the government's Treaty Principles Bill and stance on the official use of Te Reo Māori. Lee, do you agree?
Yeah, I think so too. It was just a sheer accident, good fortune that all this was going on. So it tends to support neither one side or another, if there is such thing as a side in the political debate. But the timeline of the film goes up to 1834. I deliberately avoided the treaty and the Declaration of Independence. I didn't want to get those politics muddied up into the fiction of that we were telling. We touch on it a little, but yeah, it's very timely.
Lee, my final question, it's a bit of a cheeky one. As a director of one of the James Bond films, Die Another Day, I would love to know who you think the next James Bond should be.
I really can't have an opinion on that. It won't be a woman. It'll be some white guy.
That's your official answer, some white guy.
Yeah.
Lee Tamahori and Robin Scholes, great to chat. And The Convert is out in cinemas tomorrow. That is a wrap. The Oscars dust has settled for another year, with Oppenheimer predictably scooping most of the biggest and brightest gongs. And it's that predictability that had me wondering on Monday's show whether the Oscars are exciting anymore. We basically know who's going to win every time now. It turns out you agree with me. Thank you for fulfilling my opinion. We asked on Instagram if you get excited about the Oscars. 85% of you said nah. And then we also put the poll up on stuff.co.nz, and 93% of the people on there said no as well. Do we formally submit these results to the Academy? I'm unsure. But next year they might need some lights, camera and traction, am I right? To make sure you always get to play along with our polls, chuck NZ Stuff a follow on Instagram and TikTok. It is time to talk Kategate, because what on earth is going on with Princess Catherine and the royal family? The Princess of Wales was forced to apologise this week after posting a photo online for Mother's Day that was very clearly photoshopped, edited, altered, whatever you want to call it. This was not an original image. Now, normally, this may not have caused as much of a stir as it has, but given the fact that Kate Middleton had not officially been seen in public officially since Christmas Day, this exploded. The whole situation has launched 1,000 conspiracy theories, and here to trawl through them all is Lyric Wywoody Smith, one of Stuff's expert culture reporters. Lyric, lovely to chat.
Nice to see you too.
Kate has apologised and says she edited the photo herself, a photo that major news agencies pulled once it became clear it wasn't in some way or other legit. What do you think of the picture?
Look, there's clearly some inaccuracies in there. If you look closely, there's a part of Princess Charlotte's sleeve that is missing. The zipper in here on Catherine are misaligned. There's a hair pattern that looks fake. Parts of the children's bodies look a bit too soft and blurry for the photo to be original. So what do I make of the picture? Great, great Mother's Day optics until you look too close.
And is anyone talking about the fact Kate isn't wearing any wedding rings in it?
Well, this is one of the bigger theories about why she's been MIA, is that she and Will are secretly separating. And that's why she hasn't been seen in public, and that's why they haven't been seen together for a while.
And this all started, of course, because in mid-January, the palace issued a statement saying the princess had already undergone a planned abdominal surgery and that she'd be in hospital for up to 2 weeks recovering, and then she wouldn't be resuming public duties till after Easter. So we were kind of given the timeline. So then why did people start speculating so much?
I guess the palace's PR strategy is always never complain, never explain. But a few days after Catherine's health was disclosed to the public, it came out that the king had cancer, and the palace was really open about that. So there's a lot of suspicion over why the king's health has been so publicly discussed, but Kate's has been very quiet.
Of course, this is a woman who stood outside hospital posing for pictures right after giving birth. On a scale of 1 to 10, Lyric, how do you think all of this has been handled?
From the palace's side, 0. But from the internet side, 10. I mean, call me a palace bootlicker, but I was like, look, Kate's just trying to recover, guys. And then when the internet started going on with their own theories about she's getting a butt lift, she's like been kidnapped by the US president. Yeah, probably asked more questions than it's answered. But it's definitely put a lot of pressure on the palace to deal with social media and how crazy rumor mills can go. You know, we're not talking about Kim Kardashian doctoring, you know, a photo of her body. It's the bloody Princess of Wales.
Exactly. This is what makes it so strange. Stuff. Expert culture reporter Lyric Y. Woody Smith, thank you so much for indulging me in a chat about Kate Gate. And just because I can, here's my 2 cents. Something's not right. That's my opinion. Something is just simply not right. While the conspiracy theories are completely wild, and they get wilder by the minute, I do believe that something is afoot here. I will happily be proven wrong should we ever find out what in the heck has happened. But something is not right. You heard it here first. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells. I'll say it again. Something's not right.
If you like this podcast, please support our work. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.